Hi, Allison.
Hi, Max.
Guess what?
What?
I'm so excited.
Why?
There are we have brand new merchandise. For those who join the Patreon at the $5 level, you get to join the Sticker of the Month Club.
Whoa, $5 a podcast?
$5 a podcast. Not only do you get to make the podcast happen, but also you get a sticker. This month, we are starting with Fulon Devi.
I get a sticker of Fulon Devi.
Yes, ma'am.
And then I get a new, different sticker every month?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, man.
So what's that website, Allison?
Patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Do it. Hello.
Hi, everyone.
And welcome to
The Bitchery of History.
My name's Max.
I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm going to be talking about Ada Lovelace.
I am so stoked.
Yes.
I am going to be talking about Adeline Yen Ma.
Ooh, okay. Tell me about her.
Get ready. So she was born November 30th, 1937 in Tajing, China.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother died 2 weeks after giving birth to her, so she was considered bad luck to the family.
Oh.
It's a story. It's a struggle. She had four older siblings, and her grandfather, who she called Yi Yi, and her aunt Baba also lived with their family. Side note, I call my grandmother Baba, aww, so I really connected with story. It was great. 1 year after her mother died, Adeline's father remarried a half-Chinese, half-French woman named Jean, but who all the children called Niang, which is another word for mother. And she set up two classes in the household, essentially. The first class was herself, the father, Adeline's father, mm-hmm, and their two children that they had together. And then the second class were the five stepchildren, Yi Yi and Aunt Baba.
Oh.
So not everyone was treated equally within the household.
Right.
And Adeline's father was an extremely successful and wealthy businessman. He had started an import-export business, and he mm-hmm was really savvy because, obviously, this is 1937 China.
Right.
There's a lot of upheaval politically, socially, economically.
Absolutely.
But when he remarried, Niang essentially took control over the finances of the household. So she took money away from everyone, including the grandfather and Aunt Baba, and instructed them that if they ever needed money, they would have to come and ask her first.
Oy vey.
Since Adeline was the youngest, she received the greatest abuse from the rest of the family. She was the youngest stepchild. She was constantly left out by her stepmother. She didn't receive presents when the rest of her siblings received presents on Chinese New Year. She would be told there wasn't enough room for her to go on outings. She also endured horrible bullying from her older siblings. There's including a story, her three older brothers gave her a glass of orange juice to drink that actually contained all of their urine.
Oh, Jesus.
She tells another story in her memoir that all of the children received baby chicks as presents. And since she was the youngest, she got the smallest and the mm-hmm weakest of the baby chicks. But she loved the chick anyway, of course. Her father had recently gotten a German Shepherd puppy and decided to test his training with one of the chicks. And of course, Adeline's chick was chosen. And the
Jesus
dog was supposed to sit patiently and not attack the chick. But of course, it did. And it died in Adeline's hands later that day. So,
God, this poor woman.
Her grandfather and her Aunt Baba were the only two in the household that really cared about her. But this, of course, made her stepmother furious. She constantly restricted interactions between
it's
the
like
two of them
an
until they were
wicked stepmother.
Yes. All of the children attended various private Catholic schools in the area. But once Niang entered the family, she stopped giving the children tram fare to get to school and ordered them to walk. It was about 3 mile walk for the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, the children gave in, of course, and would go to the stepmother and beg for tram fare money or mm-hmm ask for tram fare money. Adeline did the move I would do, which is never ask. And she walked to school every day in all types of weather. Sometimes her aunt, who had a job at the women's bank, would wait around the corner and pick her up and drive her to school. But she was not going to play that game.
Yeah.
Talk about 2 miles uphill both ways in
you
the snow.
You might treat me badly, but you ain't going to make
mm-hmm
me beg.
This led to Adeline thriving in school. It was the only place that she could really get away and be her own person. So she threw herself into her schoolwork as a way of escape and received top marks in almost every subject.
Good for her.
She saw this as the only way to make her father proud of her and love her and get recognition. One time, her friends decided to throw her a surprise party because Adeline won class president. So they said, great, we'll throw you a surprise party. They showed up to her house unannounced to throw the surprise party. And Adeline got in trouble for inviting guests over without asking. So her stepmother sent them away. They heard her friends outside, heard her stepmother, you know, yelling at Adeline. And one of the friends yelled out that she had horrible parents. She then was sent away to boarding school in northern China in the 1940s. So during the Japanese War and World War II, and lots of things are going down.
Right.
Her family had moved by this point to Hong Kong, which was safer than mainland China because it was still under rule by the British.
Right.
And her parents instructed all of her siblings and other aunts and uncles to have absolutely no contact with her while she was in boarding school. So no visits, no letters, no care packages.
Good God. It's
nothing.
Like they were going out of their way to make her life miserable.
Now, as the Japanese advanced, all of the other children at school were sent home because of the growing danger. No one came for Adeline until finally Niang's sister, so the stepmother's sister, found out that she was in school up in northern China and picked her up on the way to Hong Kong. Now, we have some bright spots.
This sister needs a medal.
Right. When Adeline was 14, she won a playwriting competition that was open to all English-speaking participants. She got a front-page spread in the local newspaper, but neither she nor her father knew until one of his colleagues showed him the article.
Wow.
And because of this and her marks in school, her father finally agreed to send her to London Hospital Medical School when she was 17.
Whoa.
What?
What?
I know. So at medical school, Adeline was one of the few women studying in the program and the only woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
She faced a lot of racial and sexual discrimination, of course, including people telling her that by her and the other women being in the program, they were taking spots and scholarship money from men who were more likely to be successful. However, I don't have this confirmed, of course, because I don't know her thoughts, but I feel like going, oh, you think this is bad? This discrimination?
Right.
You don't know what abuse is.
Yeah.
Like, come at me. Bring it.
Come live in
Bring
my house.
Bring it.
Right, exactly.
I'm ready for this. She finished school and completed an internship in England, but after breaking off a relationship with Carl, who was one of her teachers, 8 years her senior, and also white. So very sort of scandalous affair.
Right.
After she broke off that relationship, she decided to return to China and be with her family and practice medicine there. And she wanted to practice internal medicine, but her father discouraged her and wanted her to become an OBGYN. There was a family friend who had an in with an internship opportunity at the obstetrician department, and he implored Adeline to take it. So she did, even though she had a better job offer that would pay her more. She did it to please her father. So the internship didn't pay her enough money to afford an apartment. But instead of letting Adeline stay with them, of course, Niang instructed her to just stay in the on-call room of the hospital.
Oh, my God.
Which she did.
Of course she did.
Of course. So she was stuck in the hospital during a typhoon when she started talking to another male intern at the hospital who told her that the least amount of prejudice he had ever received was in America. So at least we were doing okay in the 40s and the 50s.
Or maybe it's just by comparison.
Maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
So she applied to a medical school program in Philadelphia, and she was accepted, but she couldn't afford the airfare ticket. And of course, she knew her family wasn't going to help her. So she wrote to the school that she would be studying at, and they agreed to help pay for her flight. So upon arriving in America, she stayed for a few days in New York with the male intern that she'd met at the hospital in Hong Kong. And that's where she met his roommate, Byron, an engineer, who declared the next morning that he was going to marry Adeline. Yeah. And 6 weeks later, they did marry.
Good
it's not
her.
A happy ending.
Oh, no.
He was not what he advertised himself to be. He was in debt. He didn't have a green card, like he told her. And he was working at a restaurant instead of as an engineer. As he told her.
Can she catch a break?
We'll get there. Upon hearing that there were job opportunities for engineers in California, they moved to California.
Okay.
Then Adeline set up a very successful practice as an anesthesiologist. They had one son together, but Byron was still physically abusive and changed much after their marriage. He would disappear for days or weeks and didn't really contribute to the household income. So after a visit from her father and Yang, they urged her to get a lawyer and to try and separate herself from Byron. And she hadn't gotten a divorce previously because she didn't want to disappoint her parents.
Right.
But once she finally kind of had their okay with it, she was set up by... She got a divorce, was set up by a coworker with a man named Robert, a microbiologist, mm-hmm. and the two would later marry and have one daughter.
Aww.
So,
okay.
All right, it took a little bit.
Yeah.
During this time, Adeline felt that her relationships with her parents were starting to heal. Niang and her father visited when her father had fallen ill, and seeing the success that she'd had in California, they both seemed impressed. They seemed very proud. In the 50s, Adeline's older sister, Lydia, was set up in arranged marriage with a man named Samuel, but that didn't work out either. So Lydia was effectively disowned from the family. And
what a weird table turn.
Right. Because they were kind of careless with their money. They moved into one of the father's houses with an aunt, and then there were some shady business dealings. Like, that's a whole different, that's like a longer side tangent. It essentially led to her being disowned and kind of blacklisted from the families. But then in the 80s, so 30 years later, on a trip to Shanghai, Adeline runs into Lydia and the two reunite after not seeing each other for 30 years.
Whoa.
And Lydia asked Adeline to help her son by sponsoring him to go to university in America so he could study music. And Adeline agreed to help do this. So things are looking up.
Yeah.
When their father passed away, all of the children, except for Susan, who had been disowned in 1973 for standing up to Niang, gathered to hear the will read, expecting to get part of the estate. Of course, that did not happen because Niang had everything altered, so she got all the money. 2 years later, she passed away, and Adeline noted that her family, which she thought she was repairing relationships with, started acting really strangely, and she wasn't sure what was going on. And she was sure that she would receive something in Niang's will.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, before their father died, since all of his assets and money were transferred to her, then she would distribute them.
Right.
But to her shock, she was completely cut out of the will. She asked to visit Niang's apartment and look for the original will of her father. And she found the will, which left 20% of his estate to Adeline. And also hundreds of letters written by Lydia to Niang, essentially turning the family against Adeline, even though she had helped all of them and helped Lydia's son.
Oh my God.
So abuse just ruins everyone.
Yes, seriously.
Let's be clear. Adeline decided to not pursue any kind of legal action against her siblings. Instead, she told her husband, Robert, that it was enough for her to have been named in her father's will. That was all that she wanted. She wanted to feel that she had been loved by someone in her family. In 1997, Adeline published her memoir, Falling Leaves, which mm-hmm. tells the entire story of her childhood and the disputes over her family's estate. And it became a New York Times bestseller, sold millions of copies. It was translated into 22 languages.
Wow.
And after the success of her first book, Adeline quit medicine and became a writer full time.
Good for her.
She writes children's books like Chinese Cinderella. Based on a true story.
Yeah, sure.
It's essentially an abridged version of her memoir, but written for children. And then she's written other books on Chinese philosophy and on medicine.
Wow.
She has some great quotes from the Chinese Cinderella. One says, "Please believe that one single positive dream is more important than 1,000 negative realities."
Yes.
And that is, and she's still living today.
Whoa.
Yeah, 1937. She's kicking it.
She's 80 now.
Yep.
Go for you, girl. You go. All right. Well, thank you so much. That was a harrowing story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it ended the way it did.
Yes. Mostly a happy ending.
Mostly a happy ending, yeah. Lord. My stepmom, when she married my dad, she asked me and my sister, she said, "Do I have to be your evil stepmom now?" And I said, "Please don't."
Aw. Do you get along with your stepmom?
Very much so. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. She That's listens good. To every episode of the podcast, too.
Yeah.
So shout out, Gretchen. I love you.
Oh, hold on. I'm so sorry. I thought Gretchen was your sister. Gretchen is your stepmom?
Yeah.
Every time I hear you talk about Gretchen, I don't know why I think it's... What's your sister's name?
Veronica.
It's I don't know why I thought Molly, Gretchen Veronica was your sister.
And Molly, Veronica, and Calvin are my siblings.
Molly and Calvin, I know, because Calvin's the little one.
Yeah.
Is Veronica older or younger?
Veronica's 2005, so she's 12. Well, Molly's my age, so we talk almost all the time, and Calvin's always getting himself in. Calvin got into a fist fight. This is a completely off the... He got into a fist fight at preschool the other day.
I was going to say, isn't he 5?
Yes, and he got into a fist fight.
Oh my gosh.
And Veronica is a licensed artsy student, so
okay.
She's in her room and quiet. Fabulous. She's drawing and all that fun stuff.
Oh, so great.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though, because that shows that you do get along well with her, because you bring her up in stories all the time. Gretchen, yeah. I just always thought that was your sister. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was your stepsister.
She's been my stepmom since 2004, and then I've known her longer than I haven't known her in my lifetime.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And my two younger siblings call my mother, so Gretchen's children, Veronica and Calvin, call my mother
Lisa,
Aunt Lisa.
That's so nice.
And she comes and stays at the house sometimes, and yeah.
That's
it's
good.
It's like a true modern family.
Good, yeah. I mean, I hear...
I love it.
I hear that sometimes people are like, no, it really... We're better when we're not married. Oh, and we get along absolutely. Way better and not in the, being in the same house.
Yeah.
So good. All right. Well, side tangent.
Absolutely. All right. So I am talking... about Ada Lovelace.
Get it.
Widely considered to be the first ever computer programmer.
What?
Are you ready for this?
I'm so ready.
So she was born Augusta Lee Gordon, and her father was Lord Byron. Yeah, right? Real name, George Gordon, which I did not know.
George Gordon. Sounds like he wants to join the Avengers.
Oh my God. Perfect Marvel name. And her mother's name was Anne Isabella Mbanke on December 10th, 1815. So born in the early 19th century.
All right.
Lord Byron is actually the one who started calling her Ada, but didn't have an interest in having a relationship with her. Mm-hmm. And her parents actually separated when she was only a year old, even though that the law stated that fathers had legal custody over their children after separation.
Right.
Ada still stayed with her mother in their grandparents' home.
Oh, okay.
Lord Byron actually left England for good after that, and Ada never saw him again. So even though he's her father, there really isn't that much...
He's not her dad.
Personal... Exactly. By blood, not by relationship.
Right.
She didn't even see a portrait of him until her 20th birthday.
What?
So her mother remarried in 1856, and she became the Baroness Wentworth.
Ooh.
Now, Ada was frequently ill as a child, and at 8... she actually started experiencing headaches that were so severe they obscured her vision. Mm. And then in 1829, she contracted measles and was actually paralyzed and subjected to bed rest for over a year. And Boy. It took her 2 years. By 1831, she was able to walk with crutches.
Wow.
While Ada was ordered to bed rest, she conceptualized a flying machine at the age of 12.
What?
She studied the anatomy of birds and the suitability of various materials before illustrating a winged flying apparatus. Quote, I've got a scheme, she wrote to her mother, to make a thing in the form of a horse with a steam engine in the inside, so contrived as to move an immense pair of wings fixed on the outside of this horse in such a manner as to carry it up into the air while a person sits on its back.
And she's 12?
She's 12 at this point.
Holy, oh, yeah, holy guacamole.
She had also been reading scientific magazines, which is probably where she got some of these ideas. She wanted to keep up with the inventions that the Industrial Revolution had brought, because she's living during this time of amazing innovation, kind of what we're living through right now. So it's also during this time that Ada begins developing her mathematical and technological skills, all that know-how that she puts to work. Her mother was worried that Ada would show signs of the quote, insanity that her father possessed, and encouraged her mathematics study from the age of 4. Her mother, too, was also considered a mathematical whiz. Lord Byron called her the Princess of Parallelograms. This was an unusual course of study for women in the 19th century, of course,
right,
especially in England. But because of her family status and her family and the family that her mother then married into, Ada was offered a lot more opportunities, of course, than many other women were offered. She studied poetry and literature, along with her love for math and science. She believed that intuition and imagination were critical to effectively applying mathematical and scientific concepts. She also greatly valued metaphysics and viewed that and mathematics as both tools to explore, quote, the unseen worlds around us. Ooh. Apparently, in 1833, she had an affair with one of her tutors, and after they were caught, she tried to elope with him. However, the tutor's relatives told her mother, who had everything covered up to to prevent a public scandal.
Right, right.
They said, no. This story is not completely verified. We only have really one source, but it was there. It was mentioned in something. So I thought it would be interesting. A nice little bit of color to put in as well. As a young adult, she became close friends with her tutor, Mary Somerville, who was the first woman to ever be admitted into the Royal Astronomical Society.
Ooh.
And Mary introduced Ada to one of her great friends and influences, Charles Babbage, in 1833.
Such a British name. Charles Babbage.
Charles Babbage. Her relationship with Babbage went on to become one of the most influential in terms of her maths and sciences career.
Wow.
Through Babbage, she studied advanced mathematics with the University of London professor Augustus De Morgan, although she did not attend the university. She just studied with the professor. Babbage invited her to see the prototype of his difference engine, an automated mechanical calculator designed to tabulate polynomial functions, which she became fascinated with and used every excuse to visit Babbage so that she could see this machine. He was so impressed with her intellect and analytic skills that he called her the Enchantress of Numbers.
Ooh.
In 1843, he wrote of her, "Forget this world and all its troubles, and if possible, its multitudinous charlatans. Everything in short, but the Enchantress of Numbers."
That is the title of the HBO series.
Absolutely, the Enchantress of Numbers. At 17, she was presented to the court and was very popular and desirable, in part because of her brilliant mind. I mean, duh. She was a regular at court and attended many events, dancing often and employing that charm on all of the court people.
Mm-hmm.
On July 8th, 1835, she married William King, a baron, and she became Lady King. What a name.
Oh, my God.
So they definitely had a nice life.
Yeah.
They had three homes around England, including a home in London. And they had three children together. Anne Isabella, Ralph, and Byron. Named after her father, who she didn't see a portrait of till she was 20. So, obviously, she knew who her father was. And she had some connection to him. And even after they had children, her husband was still very supportive of all of her academic endeavors, still wanted her to go on doing all the math and stuff. They discovered a little bit later on that Ada was descendant of the extinct Barons Lovelace. And in 1838, her husband was made the Earl of Lovelace and Viscount Ockham. So Ada became the Countess of Lovelace. So Ada also became interested in the studies of phrenology, which is the study of the brain as an organ. And mesmerism, most commonly known as animal magnetism. In 1844, she told her friend Woronzow Grieg about the desire she had to create a mathematical model for how the brain gives rise to thoughts and nerves to feelings, or as she put it, quote, a calculus of the nervous system. She didn't complete this project, but part of the reason she was so interested in the brain was her mother's preoccupation with the potential madness that resided in her. She learned how to carry out electrical experiments for this project from the electrical engineer Andrew Cross. So you see all these different interests are coming together to do the big thing that she ends up doing. In 1842, or between 1842 to 1843, Ada was asked to translate an article on Babbage's analytical engine that had been written by Italian engineer Luigi Federico Menabrea for a Swiss journal. With the article, she included a set of notes that better explained how the machine worked and its difference from the difference engine, which was the first, quote, computer.
Right.
These notes also include, in complete detail, a method for calculating a sequence of Bernoulli numbers with the engine, which would have run correctly had the analytical engine ever been built. Based on these notes and the calculations that accompanied them, Ada Lovelace is considered to be the first ever computer programmer. And this method is recognized as the world's first computer program. Almost 100 years before the first computer was ever actually built, she was writing programs to run on them.
Amazing. Bitches get stuff done. Bitches She's like, stuff. Trust me, in 100 years, you guys are going to want this. Right. Just trust me. I got it. I'm on it. It's handled, as Olivia Pope might say.
She theorized a method for the engine to repeat a series of instructions, a process known as looping that computer programs use today. In the notes, she also dismissed the notion of artificial intelligence. She wrote, quote, "The analytical engine has no pretensions whatever to originate anything. It can do whatever we know how to order it to perform. It can follow analysis, but it has no power of anticipating very analytical relations or truths." This has actually been the subject of many debates, and Alan Turing, the famous British... Rain. Later on, wrote a rebuttal for it in his paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence. However, her work greatly influenced his later work right. on the first modern computers in the 1940s. And Jeanette wrote a note for us to put in here. She said, "May I just point out that two of the earliest developments of computer programming came from a woman, Ada Lovelace, and a gay man, Alan Turing." And then big capital letters, she wrote, "F you, society."
Real.
Her notes were published in Taylor's Scientific Memoirs under the initials AAL because she wanted to lower the stigma against her being a woman.
Yes.
And also her name as in terms of what her place was in society.
That is apparently why Harry Potter is written by J.K. Rowling and not Joanne Rowling or Joanne Kathleen
Is that also
Rowling.
Why she went under the she went under a pen name for...
For the casual vacancy or whatever? I'm not sure.
Or do you think she just wanted to...
I mean, Stephen King sometimes writes under a different pen name as well. I think that's more in line with what the book is about or what the story is about, and it's probably more discussion between them and the publisher.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same as Lemony Snicket writes sometimes under other names.
Right.
But I don't know how factual it is because I read it on the internet, but I've read it a few places that the publisher said, "Boys will not read this book."
Oh.
If it's written by Joanne or Joanne Kathleen, so J.K. Rowling.
All right. So her notes, again, were published in Taylor's Scientific Memoirs under the initials AAL. However, they went widely unnoticed by those outside of her immediate group of scientists and her colleagues. In 1953, more than 100 years after her death, her notes on Babbage's analytical engine were republished. The engine was then recognized as an early model for computers and her notes as a description of a computer software. What's interesting, and I saw this in some of the other research that I was doing on Ada, is that when she did all of these analytical notes for Babbage, she actually corrected several of his mathematical equations that would not have worked if she had not gone through and actually corrected all of these. So her notes are much, much longer than the transcript she was actually translating. And there's one part where she uses music to describe the machine that's pretty cool. So she says, quote, "Supposing, for instance, that the fundamental relations of pitched sounds in the science of harmony and of musical composition were susceptible of such expression and adaptations, the engine might compose elaborate and scientific pieces of music of any degree of complexity or extent." Dorian Swede, a historian of computing and a Babbage specialist, possibly described her findings in the most understandable way. "Ada saw something that Babbage, in some sense, failed to see. In Babbage's world, his engines were bound by number. What Lovelace saw, what Ada Byron saw, was that numbers could represent entities other than quantity. So once you had a machine for manipulating numbers, if those numbers represented other things, letters, musical notes, then the machine could manipulate symbols of which number was one instance according to the rules. It is this fundamental transition from a machine which is a number cruncher to a machine for manipulating symbols according to rules that is the fundamental transition from calculation to computation, to general purpose computation. And looking back from the present high ground of modern computing, if we are looking and sifting history for that transition, then that transition was made explicitly by Ada in that 1943 paper."
Wow.
Ada developed a kind of scandalous reputation during the 1840s. She loved to gamble, and this garnered her a very large group of male friends, which led to, of course, rumors of multitudinous affairs. She tried to use mathematics to develop ways to win at gambling, and it failed miserably and actually ended up her in financial peril at times. So Ada Lovelace died at the age of 36, the same age her father had died, on November 27th, 1852. Her cause of death was uterine cancer, which was exacerbated by the bloodletting her physicians performed.
Ugh.
Her mother took almost complete control over her life during her last several months, dictating who she could and could not see. Ada had a religious transformation under her mother's care, repented her previous, quote, conduct, and made Annabella her executor.
Mm.
In August, before her death...
Her executor?
Yes. What did I say?
Executor.
Oh, yes. Her executor. In August, before her death, she confessed something to her husband, which made him leave her bedside for good, but it's unknown what she told him.
Whoa. She built the flying
Here's a
machine.
Weird fact. Charles Dickens read a passage from his novel Dombey and Son to her on her deathbed. It's just a, side fact.
I'm just shocked. It's one of the cool things about history is we kind of forget that all of these people that we hold up and put on all these pedestals were normal
right.
people that ate food and drank right. and lived and died. And so it's always so funny. It's just funny when you find things like, oh, yeah. And then she was best friends with Mark Twain. And they went on a hunting trip together. It's fine. It's totally casual. Like canoeing with Mark Twain. Who wouldn't want to do that?
She was buried next to her father at the Church of St. Mary Magdalena in Nottinghamshire.
Mm.
In the years after her death, of course, the thing happened that happens to every successful woman. Several people have tried to discredit her by saying that she was merely working off the ideas that Babbage had already discovered. But it cannot be denied that she saw the potential in the analytical engine as a machine capable of expressing entities other than quantities. I mean, honestly, it you can't deny it
the
if
thing,
you read the notes.
The other thing you can't deny is that in the early 1800s, a 12-year-old girl stuck in her bed designs a freaking flying machine. Okay?
Right, exactly.
Oh, people, people, exactly. people, people.
In 1979, the U.S. Department of Defense named a newly developed computer language Ada. And it is still used around the world today in the operation of real-time systems in the aviation, healthcare, transportation, financial, infrastructure, and space industries. Ada has been depicted in many plays in the 20th and 21st centuries, and a film was made about her in 1997 called Conceiving Ada. Recently, Ada Lovelace and Babbage are the main characters in a graphic novel called The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage. Lovelace and Mary Shelley are also the main characters in a steampunk series called The Wallstone Detective Agency, and she was honored this year with a Google Doodle on International Women's Day.
Fab.
And that's Ada Lovelace.
Thank you.
A seriously badass bitch.
The Bitchery of History is brought to you by Audible.com. You can start your free trial and get a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/bitchery. You can get Chinese Cinderella by Adeline Yen Ma
yes.
on audible.com and yes. give that a listen.
I am so excited to listen to it.
Where can you get that book, Max?
audibletrial.com/bitchery. Hey, y'all. If you are enjoying the podcast, do Allison and myself a favor and look down at that phone or computer or Zoom that you're listening to this podcast on and give The Bitchery of History a rating or a review. Those reviews, they help other people find the podcast, which helps us keep doing the podcast. And you want that, right? Thanks. All right. So today in history.
Yes, please. On July 2nd, 1918, Francis Reed Elliott is accepted into the American Red Cross Nursing Service, becoming the first African-American woman in the service.
Yes. And then on July 4th, 414.
What?
Emperor Theodosius II, at the age of 13, yielded power to his sister Aelia Pulcheria, age 15, who reigned as regent until his death in 450, proclaiming herself Empress of the Eastern Roman Empire. We should look her up.
How have we not done this? On July 7th, 1865, Mary Surratt, American conspirator in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, is hanged, becoming the first woman executed in the United States.
All right, so, term of the week. Women's intuition.
I've got it.
Okay. Oh, you've got it.
Period.
I thought you were like, I'm going to explain it. No, you just got it.
I've got it.
So I thought we would talk about myth versus reality. I was doing some research trying to think of some things, some discussion points for us when we're talking about this. Something that actually made sense to me is that because of the social power, where social power lies, it's not so much that women are born with just an extra intuition. In fact, the term women's intuition, I think now, after doing my research, is a denigrating term to refer to simply what is a group of people who, by virtue of being lower on the social totem pole, has had to, through necessity, learn how to pick up social cues and how to pick up more instances of conversation and conversational styles, or getting things that they want through means other than direct communication. And so I think it makes women more susceptible to bodily cues.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
What you thought about that.
I mean, that really, that idea makes sense for sure. And there is the thought that most women, or people who identify as women, the way that they get power, get what they want in a situation is not by force, but it's by manipulating the other people in the situation in a positive or a negative way. But using those types of social cues and dialogue to achieve their ends, rather than just grabbing what they want or punching someone in the face.
If it achieves the same ends, does manipulation have to be a negative thing?
No, that's why I said positive or negative.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends what the manipulation is.
Because force is manipulation. I mean, it's physical manipulation.
But I do think there's also probably some biological factors. The thing that I was thinking about is I've talked to many mothers who have all said they used to sleep really soundly. You know, nothing used to wake them up. And they still do, but they can hear one sound from their child, or that sounds like their child, and be immediately awake. My mom is that way. You can just go up and touch her on the shoulder and boom, she's awake. She's talking to you. It might not be the most coherent conversation you've ever had, but she's she's there and she's present. And for me right now, I sleep very soundly. Once I'm asleep, it's not impossible to wake me up, but you can't just turn on a light and I wake up. You kind of have to engage me slightly. And so I do think there's a biological factor to, once you've given birth and you have to have that awareness for the safety of others around you. That's probably something that's evolved.
That is one of the things that I found in my research was the idea that if something is a learned behavior, could it bleed into being an evolutionary trait eventually? If something has such a large effect on so many people, you know, could, through Charles Darwin, the theory of evolution, natural selection, are women who then become more adept at reading social cues, at manipulating those in the room, do they then have a higher chance of passing on their genes and then kind of strengthening the
the gene pool of
gene pool of women's intuition?
I don't know about in terms of gaining power or using social cues, but I do think that backs up the biological argument to waking up, because if you're more likely to wake up and save your child's life from the hungry bear that's pawing around your cave, then your child is going to live and continue to pass on those genes.
Absolutely.
And the mom who was like, no, I'm sleeping, I'm zonked out, that kid is eaten by the bear.
Right.
So he didn't get to pass on any more genes.
I wonder if we can come up with a new name for it instead of women's intuition, or do we just reappropriate it? Although I don't necessarily think that it's any longer a negative connotation to it. Do you think?
I don't think so. I think it's not negative in terms of women's intuition, but I think it's sometimes used as kind of brushing something under the rug, or as an excuse to not go in and further investigate that situation and just go, women's intuition, and leave it at that and not ask more questions. So I don't think we need to reappropriate or change it, but I would challenge people who are using that as an answer or as an excuse to investigate more.
Right. Works for me.
Cause of the week. Yes, nailed it. I found some really awesome causes.
Okay.
The one that I wanted to share first is Girls on the Run. It's girlsontherun.org.
Okay.
And I love running. If you didn't know, I'm a huge runner.
We've talked about it a couple times on
the
podcast.
It's great. Yeah. So I like this organization, and their mission is, we inspire girls to be joyful, healthy, and confident using a fun, experience-based curriculum, which creatively integrates running. And kind of their values and their goals are recognizing our power and responsibility to be intentional in our decision making, embrace our differences and find strength in our connectedness, express joy, optimism, and gratitude through our words, thoughts, and actions, nurture our physical, emotional, and spiritual health, lead with an open heart and assume positive intent, and stand up for ourselves and others.
Oh, I love that.
I do too. And I will say personally for me, because I haven't always been a runner. It's only been in the past few years that I've really started to run and to engage in that. And it does give you a lot of confidence. You feel very strong and you feel like you can take on that situation because you just ran 10 miles. So
my favorite part of running is the after part when you're laying on the ground and your legs feel like
you're dying, but it's great.
No, but it's like your leg, your upper half feels like you're dying and your legs, you can't feel them at all. And you're just like walking on air. It's great.
So you can find out more about them. Maybe join a group, volunteer with a group, probably give some donations as well if that's what you're interested in at girlsontherun.org.
Yes. All right. The Bitchery of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions. You can find us on all the social media sites. Just search for The Bitchery of History or search our handle at UMPBOH.
We also have an amazing website with a shop now.
Yes.
Buy the merchandise.
Get those stickers.
UMPBOH.com.
Yes, ma'am. We could not do this without our amazing team. Sydney.
Jeanette.
Kim.
Steph.
Dan.
Jess.
Keegan.
Olivia.
And Vic.
Thank you.
Yes. As always, if you'd like to help us make this podcast happen, you can help us do that at patreon.com/UrsulaMajor. Not only do you get to help us make it happen, but you also get to join the conversation on that contributors blog.
What?
Yes.
And as always,
bitches get stuff done.